vision of this. And that in the early church, they would read the Old Testament scriptures, they would read the apostles' writings, and the host of them all along side by side. And that's the last time I'm going to say that today, and I'm sure you appreciate it. Paul writes in a letter to a church in Ephesus that we've been studying, in chapter 5 and 6, we see the most comprehensive Christian expression of one of these house tables. I told you I wasn't going to say it again, so I didn't. And today, we're going to unpack what Paul says in part of that. We're rushing ahead to chapter 6. Justin is going to take chapter 5 next week. But this list of house rules, the house table, tells us how to interact with our spouses. It tells us how to interact with our children. It tells us how to interact in our workplaces. So we're going to be unpacking that over the next few weeks. But today, as we're talking about me and my family, we're going to talk about the relationship that dads have with children. And we're going to see something fascinating here, that Paul brings out children and gives them a whole section of it. That was not common in the Haustophone. And yes, I did say it again. But Paul includes children there, and that's a huge, huge deal, because that would not have been normal. Look at chapter 6, verse 4. It says, "Children, obey your parents because you belong to the Lord, for this is the right thing to do. Honor your father and mother. This is the first commandment with a promise. If you honor your father and mother, things will go well for you, and you will have a long life on the earth." Starting out right there, it says children. And I told you, that is a huge deal. But what it is, it's an indication that the early church had taken on and adapted, accepted the teaching that Jesus gave about children. He said, "Let the little children come to me." And you need to be like these little children if you're going to receive me and be my children. So the early church had understood the value of children as from the teaching of Jesus. And that was a radical shift from the cruelty that prevailed in the Roman Empire. In the Roman Empire, unwanted babies were abandoned. Weak and disabled children were killed, done away with completely. Even healthy children were often seen as a nuisance to dads because it made divorce complicated. That was the Roman culture of the day. So when Paul's writing to the church at Ephesus and he says, here's a section about children, here's what I want children to do, and then we're going to look in a couple of minutes what he wanted dads to do. That is a massive deal because it was a break from the cultural norms. So Paul's instructions here, give kids the key to a great life. Here's the key to a great life. If you're a kid, there's a few kids in here. Parents, you're going to be able to go home today and tell your kids what the key to a great life is, because I'm about to share it with you as Paul did. See, children's role in the relationship, and as we're going to see in a few minutes, dad's roles as well, is submission. You're going to hear a lot about submission, I suspect, over the next couple of weeks, because Ephesians talks about it, Paul talks about it, and talks about mutual submission. So children's role is to submit. And it specifically says to honor and obey. Obey and honor. Obey simply means obey. Do what I say. Any parents like that? Sure you do. Come on. Don't be afraid to admit it. You're not a bad parent if you say, yeah, I like it if my kids obey me. You should want your kids to obey you because that protects them. The word honor, I love this word. It means to respect and value. Another nuance of the word honor means literally to take care of financially. How good is that, parents? You should be getting excited about that. I'm giving you great stuff to tell your kids. They got to take care of you financially. So make sure that they're growing up, gets good jobs and all those things. So anyway, Paul gives three arguments why children should honor and obey their parents in those first three verses. First, he says, it is natural. He says, this is the right thing to do. That was standard societal behavior in the context Paul is writing to. I prayed for this morning, actually. You may have heard of a guy called Confucius. I think I was anticipating saying that name when I was stumbling over the other words. Anyway, you've heard of this guy, Confucius? Yeah. Wow. Where's Justin? Can he just take over now? I mean, anyway. Hey, in Oriental culture, a lot of his writings emphasized the respect of family. And it was a lifelong commitment. It wasn't just while kids were at home. It was forever. And today, you see that in a lot of Asian cultures. Chinese, Korean, Japanese culture are very respectful, comparatively speaking, to Western culture. I remember experiencing this when I was working with SIM, and we would be trying to mobilize people from Chinese background a lot of times. And the young adults, they would be fired up, excited, sensing a call to mission. And we would start journeying with them, and it wouldn't be very long in the journey before mom and dad said, no, that's not happening. You have to stay and take care of me as I get older. And it was a showstopper almost every single time. So that's the culture that Paul is writing into. And he's saying it's natural for children to honor and obey their parents. Now, we are not taking our cues from Confucius today. So understand we're not trying to teach his teachings. But it is helpful to understand that in societal order, it was the natural and right thing to do for children to obey and honor their parents. Paul then says, you also should be honoring and obeying your parents because you are followers of Jesus. He says, you are followers of Jesus. As followers of Jesus, obey and honor your parents. See, our relationships are transformed when we meet Christ. When we become a follower of Jesus, our relationships all should change, including our relationship with our parents. We should honor them and move from the, as a follower of Jesus, move from the self-centered, self-focused, disrespectful, rebellious type of attitude in our relationships to a loving, caring, honoring relationship. Then finally, he says, you should not only obey your parents because it's the right thing to do, it's natural, because you're a follower of Jesus, but also because it's part of God's law. And he said this, he was referring to Old Testament law in Exodus 20, verse 12, and Deuteronomy 5, 16, that says, children are to obey their parents. Now, what we need to understand here is that parental authority is God-given. That was his emphasis here. He says, you need to honor and obey your parents because God gave them the authority that they have over you. It's not just their own good ideas and their own plans. Just because they're bigger than you, they can control you. It's a God-given parental authority. Leviticus chapter 19 shows the elevation of this. God looked at parenting children, taking care of your children, or children honoring their mothers and fathers at the same level as honoring him. Leviticus 19 says, the Lord also said to Moses, give the following instructions to an entire community of Israel. You must be holy because I, the Lord your God, am holy. Each of you must show great respect for your mother and father, and you must always observe my Sabbath days of rest. I am the Lord your God. Did you see that? He said, be holy as I am holy. Honor your mom and dad and remember the Sabbath. It was a continual thought. Honoring mom and dad was right there at the same level as being holy as God is holy and remembering the Sabbath day in God's economy. Then he says, this is the first commandment with a promise. Again, looking back at those Old Testament scriptures. Long life and things will go well on the earth, he says. Now, does that confuse anyone? My hand's up. That's confusing. Why would that be confusing? Because I seem to be the only one that's confused. So tell me, why am I confused by that? Anybody know children that seem to be obedient children that didn't live a long life? Yeah, that's confusing, isn't it? So this is not a guarantee of long life for obedience. There are many obedient children who have died young, but it's a guiding principle. See, what Paul was trying to explain here is disobedience brings trouble. According to Jewish law, disrespecting your parents would get you stoned, and not in the recreational sense. It was a death sentence if you disrespected your parents. Paul frames it differently. Rather than telling them they're going to die if they don't obey and honor their parents, he gives them some positive affirmation using the promise. And if you think about it, the long life, it's a very practical thing. If your parents teach you, or if you teach your children, not to go play in traffic, they're going to have a longer life. Right? If you teach your children not to take illicit drugs and abuse alcohol and do stupid stuff like that, did I say that? Yes. Anyway, they're going to live a longer life, right? It's very practical. If children obey parents, there's a good chance their life is going to be extended because it's very practical and wise to do those things. So now, dads, moms, you can go home and tell your kids that the key to a great life is to obey and honor your parents. Should we stop now? Yep, you can just go home and do that. No. Now we're going on to the dads. Look at verse 4. It says, "Fathers, do not provoke your children to anger by the way you treat them." He says fathers, but the translators could have used the word parents there. It could have said mothers and fathers, but I reckon that the translators emphasize fathers because they know that there's something inherent about moms that is a little bit more kind and a little bit more patient. And I'm saying this generally speaking. I know there's exceptions to everything, but generally speaking, moms are going to be more patient with the kids. Moms are not going to be the ones provoking them to anger. Now, in the context, what fatherhood looked like back in Paul's day when Paul wrote this. I already gave you a brief snapshot of it earlier, but listen to what theologian William Barclay wrote. He said, "A Roman father had absolute power over his family. He could sell them as slaves. He could make them work in his fields, even in chains. He could take the law into his own hands, for the law was in his own hands, and punish as he liked. He could even inflict the death penalty on his child." That was the culture that Paul is speaking into with fathers when he says, don't provoke your children to anger. There was also a concept of child exposure. When a child was born, the child would be laid at the father's feet. And if the father stooped down and picked up the child, that was saying, I accept this child. It's a keeper. If he looked at the child and turned and walked away, the child was discarded. The child was thrown out. Now, as I thought about that, I thought, wow, that would be a hard decision to make when they're a newborn. If they were about 14 years old, and you can make that decision then, yeah, anyway. But these thrown out babies, in all seriousness, became the property of anyone who would come along and pick them up. They could just come and get them because they were unwanted. Then the people who would pick them up would then care for them and raise them in order to sell them as slaves or to stock the Roman brothels. That's what fatherhood was like back then. I'm going to read you an excerpt from a letter that a guy called Hilarion, and I thought that was hilarious, but anyway, to his wife Alice. It says this, Hilarion to Alice, his wife. This is a love letter, by the way. To Alice, his wife, with heartiest greetings. Know that we are still even now in Alexandria. Do not worry if when all the others return, I remain in Alexandria. I beg and beseech you to take care of the little child. And as soon as we receive wages, I will send them to you. If, good luck to you, you have a child, if it is a boy, let it live. If it is a girl, throw it out. You told Aphrodisias to tell me, do not forget me. How can I forget you? I beg you, therefore, not to worry. It's a strange letter, isn't it? You hear the love and affection for his wife, and no, I won't forget you, and I love you, and all that. And just the total disregard for the child that's about to be born. Throw it out if it's a girl. So, dads, I've got good news for you. I am fairly confident that you are doing a fantastic job compared to the Roman dads of the day, right? Good on you, dads. Well done. Well done. So what is our role in our relationship with our kids? The kids' role is submission. Our role is also submission. For dads, it's submission in the form of sacrifice, putting the needs of our children above our own, putting their desires above our own. While the kids obey and honor based on authority, they have to. Fathers exercise their responsibility based on restraint of their authority. Dads could exercise authority, dominion, domineer, and all of that, but they exercise their role, their submission, by restraining that authority. Paul says, do not provoke them to anger. It means do not exasperate them. Do not goad your children to resentment. Colossians chapter 3 speaks the same command. It emphasizes that the reason is that the kids may lose heart or become discouraged. So dads, I'm going to give you some tools right now. Dads, if you want to know how to frustrate your kids, lean in. I'm going to tell you over the next few minutes how you can be sure to frustrate your children. All right, you ready? First of all, if you want to frustrate your kids, don't let them be kids. Okay? Write that down. I'm going to frustrate them. Don't let them be kids. So don't allow them to be immature. Because kids are immature, but don't let that happen. Don't take into account that they are inexperienced with things because they're kids. Sure, they're inexperienced. They're only young, but how are they going to learn, right? Make sure you regularly disregard the fact that things change in life and society by always reminding them, when I was your age, and letting them know how it was. Because what you're saying, when I was your age, I walked uphill to school both ways in the snow and yada, 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 28 miles. And you're saying, and you should be doing the same thing. No, they shouldn't be doing the same thing. But you want to frustrate them, remind them what it was like when you were a kid. Don't let them be kids. To further frustrate your kids, put unreasonable demands on them. Be unreasonable with them. Make preschoolers share their toys. Okay? We're laughing, but do you watch that? Do you do that? Have you done that with your kids? Preschoolers have a toy and they won't share, and you think that's weird. Do you know they can't understand the concept of sharing until they're about 7 or 8 years old? So when Hattie doesn't want to share with her new cousins that are on the way, it's okay, sweetie. Yeah. Not going to frustrate you, Dad. Ben, don't frustrate anyone. Make them clean the rooms by themselves if you want to really frustrate them. Be unreasonable. We're being unreasonable. Make them clean the rooms. And you know what a clean room looks like, right? Clothes are picked up off the floor. Toys are put away. The bed is made with hospital corners and all of that. And there's no sandwiches under the bed and things like that. You know all of that. Your 5-year-old doesn't understand that. But don't take that into account. Frustrate the daylights out of them by saying, go clean your room the way I want it clean. Make them sit for long periods of time. Bring them into the adult service and make them endure my preaching. And expect them to sit there and behave quietly. That's ridiculous and unreasonable. You want to frustrate your kids? Do that. Expect them to always be happy. Do you like it when your kids aren't happy? I remember going through this when we were raising kids. When my kids weren't happy, life stopped. I have to figure out what's wrong, what's going on. Tell me. I would ask 100 times if I had to try to figure it out, and I still wouldn't know. And I figured out what was happening is I was expecting them to always be happy. Am I always happy? Probably not. Staff, don't say anything. Thank you. But you want to frustrate them. Expect them to always be happy. You want to really frustrate them. Tell them, do what I say, not what I do. Give them a list of rules and expectations and all that, being unreasonable, and say, and I'm not going to do any of that, but you do that, okay? Frustrating our kids. You want to frustrate them, make sure that you're harsh and cruel. When they do something silly, make fun of it. Tell them it was stupid. That will frustrate them. When they paint a picture, draw a picture, and you can't for the life of you figure out what it is, say, what is this? Yeah. That'll frustrate them. And when you're out there kicking the footy with your daughter, all right, because good daughters kick the footy too, I started to say son, and they can't do it properly, laugh at them. Be harsh. Be cruel. You're going to frustrate your kids. Another way to frustrate them, be inconsistent and unfair. Make promises and don't keep them. Say, I'll show up to your show, I'll show up to your production, I'll show up to your game, and don't do it. Yeah, there's going to be good reasons not to do it. Work is important. Friends are important. Golf is important. Make promises and then break them. Frustrate your kids. Show favoritism. When your kid's messing up, say, why can't you be more like the sibling? Imagine James growing up with Mary and Joseph. Why can't you be more like Jesus, right? You want to frustrate a kid? Make light of things that are important to them. You know that some of the things that are important to your children today won't be important 20 years from now. But right now, it's important to them. They don't know what you know. You want to frustrate them, make light of it. Act like it's not important. Use sarcasm and ridicule, humiliating them and shaming them. And the way you can do this is make fun of them publicly. Tell all your friends the funny stories about the mess ups that your kids have had. You want to frustrate them. Use your authority to abuse the child. Say, hey, I'm the boss. I'm in charge. I'm bigger than you. Wow. You see angry and hostile young people in our world? You wonder where they come from? And not in every case, I'm sure. But a lot of times we can probably trace it back to parents, to dads that frustrated their children by using these things. Assuming that you don't really want to frustrate your kids, I'm going to give you some other tools. And this is much easier. That was like six things to frustrate your kids. I'm going to give you three things to help your kids flourish. It says, fathers, in verse 4, rather, bring them up with the discipline and instruction that comes from the Lord. How to help your kids flourish. It says, bring them up. It means recognize your responsibility for bringing them up. The word literally means to nourish or to feed. It's the same word that's used in chapter 5, verse 29, when it talks about taking care of your own body. It says, nourish and feed them. Now, it's not talking about just food, shelter, and clothing, which is our responsibility, parents, to provide those things. But it's also talking about emotional and spiritual upbringing, nourishing, feeding them emotionally and spiritually. We can get some help in these things, and we've emphasized here that our help is for 80 minutes a week. And you've got like 10,080 minutes in a week. I think that was the number Simon told us. And so you can get a little bit of help from the church in that. You can get a little bit of help from school, a little bit of help from family. But you can't abdicate your responsibility. The cartoon up above me says that it was written in the Washington Post, I believe it was, that right after school was, or prayer was banned in schools in the U.S., and the dad has his paper and he's yelling. He says, what do they expect us to do? Listen to the kids pray at home? Yes. You can't abdicate your responsibility at home. You can get help, but in the end, it's your responsibility to raise your kids. It means we need to spend time with our kids. And we hear the whole argument, quality time versus quantity time. Why do they have to cancel each other out? And you think about quantity time, you realize that being home doesn't matter if you're not present. If I'm home, does it matter that I'm here right now? I'm not engaging with you, I'm not talking to you. Actually, I am, but being present means being present. Fully present, engaging. Quality time. So some people say, well, I work so hard and everything, but we take extravagant holidays and we buy nice presents and all of those things. You know what? Extravagant holidays, spending a week or 2 weeks somewhere extravagant and nice with your kids will create some memories there. But you know what? They're going to be spending that holiday with someone they don't even know if you haven't been around. Day in, day out, week in, week out. Marry the two together. Make it quantity and quality, both together. I've never had my kids come to me and say, Dad, why did you come home so early? Can't you go back to work and make more money so that we can have more stuff? But as dads, we say, oh, I have to work hard so that I can provide nice things for my family. Our kids aren't saying that. They're going to remember if you were there, not what they had. Then it says, bring them up with discipline and instruction. Discipline means giving them training with correction for improving behavior, a purpose of improving behavior. We all learn through discipline. Hebrews chapter 12, verse 6 says that who the Lord loves, he disciplines. There's consequences for our choices, but there is overboard discipline. When I was growing up, I had a friend who I would spend a fair bit of time with, sleepovers and things, and their dad was abusive. I saw one time the dad literally knocked the kid to the floor and then kicking them in the head with cowboy boots. That's extreme. That's ridiculous. That should be actually, charges should be filed against people that do those kinds of things. There's a huge shift in society because of what has legitimately been called abuse and taken place. And physical discipline has certainly taken a beating in our society today, and rightly so. But can I tell you something? Physical abuse isn't the only damaging type of abuse. Words and volume can hurt much worse. I remember, as your pastor, being real with you and being honest with you, I remember asking my mother, would you please spank me, while she was yelling and berating me. Now, I'm not going to tell you how to discipline your own kids, but probably how you're disciplining your kids is the way you were. I actually, again, being honest with you, I became a bit of a yeller. Did I become a yeller? Yeah, a little bit. And one son in particular, and I got his permission this morning to actually to use this, but his name's Grant. And I actually would use Grant almost like a swear word. It would go like, Grant! Grant! All the time. He would do things that were just crazy. Like, I bought him a set of drums when he was like 12. And then he wanted to play them in the house. Grant! He had this thing about bouncing around the house and just, he was a great kid. And he would bounce around the house and shake the house sometimes. One time, the house shook mightily. And I said, Grant! Only to find out in the news a couple hours later there was an earthquake. I'm not proud of those things, but I'm being honest and sharing with you. That's not a good way to discipline and parent. Now, I'm not telling you how to discipline, spankings, timeouts, whatever, but I will let you know that not disciplining will frustrate your kids. They won't know where the boundaries are, what's expected. They need discipline in their life for the purpose of correcting behavior, of molding them, making them. It needs to be balanced, controlled discipline, well-planned, well-thought-out. And if you take time to think out the discipline, guess what? You're not going to fly off the handle. You're not going to just be yelling. You're not just going to be beating, because you're going to have thought it out and planned what the discipline needs to look like. Motive should always be correction, not just to make us feel better because we're angry or annoyed. When we become angry in our discipline, what we're actually doing is we're disciplining them without demonstrating discipline of ourselves. Martin Lloyd-Jones said this: when you're disciplining a child, you should have first controlled yourself. What right have you to say to your child that he needs discipline when you so obviously need it yourself? Self-control and the control of temper is an essential prerequisite in the control of others. So discipline, bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. Instruction means to educate them, to warn them, to model. Teach kids how to think, not what to think. The trend is to be totally non-directive in their lives and just let them figure it out themselves. You want society telling them what to do? Somebody's going to tell them what to do. They're going to take their cues from someone. They should be taking their cues from you. We must not be too domineering and imposing our thoughts completely on our children and controlling them. See, we discourage them when we do that because we're showing them we don't trust them. When we control them and keep them reined in and it's for their own good, we believe, and we may be right sometimes, but what we're telling them, what we're communicating, when we make every decision for them, we're communicating, I don't trust you to make decisions. You know what else you're communicating? I don't trust what I've done in raising you this far to make the right decisions. I don't think I've done a good enough job. We need to let them learn and make decisions that will help them grow as they fail sometimes, and they can learn from those mistakes. True education is not the domineering stuff I've been talking about, but it's stimulation, asking them good questions, teaching them to ask questions. It's not only stimulation, but it's also simulation, modeling a disciplined life in front of them. And then finally, we need to teach our children Christian values and truths. For those of us that are followers of Jesus, this is so important. Don't take the attitude, I'm just going to let my kid decide whatever they want and figure it out. Yes, you do need to let them decide and figure it out, but you need to instruct them. You need to ingrain in them truths from God's word and from Christ, and then hopefully let them lead them to the place where they will own their own faith one day because of the upbringing they had and what they got exposed to. So as we wrap up, what kind of child are you? What kind of son are you? Or what kind of daughter are you? One who has honor for their parents? Maybe your dad wasn't a great person. Maybe they let you down. They abused you. The question that I just asked you isn't, what did your dad do? How great a dad was he? I said, what kind of son, what kind of daughter are you? You can't control what they did or didn't do. It's not too late to show honor to them, and that might require some forgiveness. If you had a bad dad. They tell us that there's a pattern that runs through life. When a four-year-old talks about their dad, they say, my daddy can do anything. When they become eight, they say, my dad is better than your dad on the playground. At 12, dad doesn't know anything. At 14, dad is so embarrassing. All right. At 21, dad doesn't understand the world today. At 25, dad, why didn't you tell me? Yeah. At 30, oh, he comes up with a good idea now and then. At 35, we must find out what dad thinks about it. At 50, what would dad have thought about that? And at 60, I wish I could talk it over. Dad, one more time. Can I encourage you? You see the pattern. Why don't you disrupt it? Don't wait till you're 60 and you're standing in front of 400 something people and you get choked up. Do it now while you still can. For dads, what kind of dad are you? Are you one that accepts your responsibility? You're a provider. Can I also encourage you not only to be a provider, but accept your responsibility for being there? Your presence is more important than presence. Are you a dad that frustrates your kids? Frustrated kids become angry adults. Are you helping your kids flourish, giving them appropriate discipline that leads to correction, teaching them, helping them discover who they are and bring out everything that God's made them to be and leading them to hopefully have a relationship with Jesus? Modeling love in front of them so that they can in turn love others. We need to be simulators, just like God the Father loves us so that we can love others. The goal this week, I want to invite you to take one step, dads, moms too if you like, towards moving your kids from frustrated to flourishing. I don't know what that step is for you. But you see your kids. And if your kids are already grown and you think this doesn't matter, it still matters. Kids are still listening. They're actually more interested now. What's one step you can take today, this week, to move your kids one step closer from frustrated to flourishing? What's your step? Father, thank you for your word. Thank you for the instructions that Paul gave as he wrote to Ephesus. Thanks for including children. And Lord, you are amazing because you hit us right where we live. You know what we need. You know how we function as people. Lord, you know our shortcomings. You know our tendency as children not to honor and obey our parents. You know our tendency as fathers to honestly frustrate our children. We don't set out to do that, Lord. You know that. So forgive us for the times that we execute our lives that way. And Lord, help us. Give us the energy, the perseverance, the stamina, the strength to help our kids flourish, to accept our responsibilities, to give them appropriate discipline, and then give them teaching that will cause them to flourish in life and love with you. In Jesus' name.